Sassy Jack Stitcher is happy to be a sponsor of Fiber Talk. We so appreciate all the heart that Gary and team put into their show, and we always look forward to each episode. Thank you, Fiber Talk, for all you do for our needlework world. Sassy Jack's is a vibrant needlework shop located in the mountains of western North Carolina, just north of Asheville. We're in the process of moving our shop to its forever home in a historic folk Victorian on the National Listing of Historic Places, just 3 miles down the road from our current location. While we're moving, you can find us in all our normal online haunts, our website at sassyjackstitchery.com, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We can't wait to open our doors and welcome you into our new old home. It was always the plan to be in this beautiful old house, and we've invested a huge chunk of our hearts into its renovation. Every renovated board, every push-button light switch, every old porch swing has lovingly, mostly, been placed there with our own hands. It has a wonderful, warm, welcoming feel about the place already, and your stitchy joy and laughter with friends will really make it home for Sassy Jack's. So look for us online for the next few months, as we'll be filling online and phone orders as per usual, and we'll be looking forward to the spring at the Baird House in Asheville, North Carolina. When the time comes, we'll leave the light on for you, just like your mom did when you were a kid, so you'll know it's time to come home. Now on to the show.
Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from Australia, second time, Brennan and Karen Kirk. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Gary and Beth.
Good to have you. It's been, a long time.
Too long.
Since we talked. See each other at Nashville, but the last show was a long time ago. I was going to look it up, and then I forgot. Oh, well.
It was 2019.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah. It's like yesterday.
Yep. So, for those who don't know, Brennan and Karen, Fox and Rabbit Designs, the Blackberry Rabbit, and then if you're on Facebook and do samplers, stitch-alongs, you certainly know about the Linen and Threads stitch-along. How many years have you been doing that, Brennan?
We've been going 5 years now.
Five?
For that. So this is our fifth year. Yep. So we just hit 18,000 people on the Facebook group, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really is. But do you have a sense of how many people finish those? It's interesting to me because you'll see people finish, like somebody the other day just finished their 2018 or something like that. Do people tend to finish those things?
Yeah, it's actually surprising. We have a lot of ladies that are actually, well, and men as well, that are actually finishing them. So, you know, they're not all like me. They don't just start things and find something pretty halfway through and move on to the next thing. They're actually stitching it through to the end. And there's actually some really amazing interpretations about our sampler that have been posted on the group.
2020 was very popular.
Yeah, with some beautiful colors and some, you know, just some amazing stitching.
And you've tried to keep each month a little smaller now too, so they're more achievable.
Yeah. Because when we did the first ones, we were using band samplers, and it was really two massive samplers for those first 2 years, and with big chunks per month, and people were having trouble keeping up to date. So since then, we've moved to smaller samplers with smaller parts per month. So, you know, people can actually achieve it really easily in a couple of days each month.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot more people finishing them now within the year or just after the end of the year.
That's great.
And I mean, with the pandemic too, I think a lot of people are home stitching. So 2020, it's been a lot of finishes.
I was surprised in my guild. I stitched the 2020 sampler and I would post it on my guild page. And there were people who still hadn't heard of you. And I'd say, oh, no, ladies, you need to go to the site and go look. They're just beautiful samplers. And it was just nice because it was just a week maybe of my stitching time, and I would be finished with the month.
Yeah. We've got ladies that get it out within like 2 hours of us putting it up.
The next morning.
It's pretty amazing. Some of them are dedicated, but yeah. So we're trying to keep the each month's piece now to something that's achievable in the month with, it still gives you time to do other things. Yeah, because you know, a lot of people that are doing stitch-alongs are doing 4 and 5 stitch-alongs. They're not just doing one.
And because the first is, it's the first over here, but it's the day before over there. Oh, sorry, over there in the Northern Hemisphere. they all know that they're getting a day's head start. And so usually Brent will post it at midnight or close to, or the day before. And literally we wake up and people have done it. And then they complain that there's a whole month to wait until the next part. So it's just like, just pace yourself.
Yeah, I started
midnight. Midnight is amazing. New Year's Eve for part one is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all stalking the page. It's actually amazing because we load the each month's installment up before we announce it on the Facebook group, and sometimes it might be, you know, a few minutes before I go and announce it. But you go back and look at the download statistics, and, you know, within a second of you uploading it, someone's downloaded it. So, you know, these ladies are sitting there. They must just sitting there refreshing the page constantly.
Especially the ones who know that it's already the – oh, you know, it's almost ticking over to the first in Australia. So they're sort of like counting down, and it makes me laugh.
Well, it's great because it's, you know, it's one of those stitch-alongs that every year has the same level of excitement and intensity that you know, it never lets up, and it's so much fun. And you're right, I love watching what people do with the colors, and everybody, you know, so many people with their own interpretation. Everybody does. But just some really creative stuff, and it's a lot of fun to watch. I started the 2019 one. That was the peacock, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I got the peacock done, and then that was it. I just can't get to them, you know, and it's demoralizing. Those people, 2 hours after it's available, they're done. Yeah, it's, oh, really? but it's just, it's like, really, it just demoralizes me, but... It really is a lot of fun, and it really shows the creativity that stitchers all over the world have. It's really great.
Yeah,
and the color choices.
Brought a lot of people together too. There's been a lot of people have set up like little groups where they come together and stitch, and we've heard from a lot of shops that they actually have a day a month in the shop where everyone comes in and stitches on the stitch along. So it's bringing people together everywhere as well, which is really nice.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We see it on people's floss tubes as well. There was a young fellow called Noah, he finished his about 2 weeks ago, and he did his floss tube. And honestly, the things he said, I was crying, wasn't I? I was like, oh, that's it. He's lost me now. I just started crying. Just the lovely things he said about what it meant to him last year. And I'm getting teary just thinking about it now. And it was just, and you know, he didn't put the initials on because he said he actually stitched it with all his friends and family around last year. And so he felt like he was stitching his family and friends into the sampler, and that was the end of me. I was just like, oh, that's it. But it just makes you realize that these things have an impact on people's lives. And he was so excited that he'd finished it, and it meant so much. And that meant a lot to us, didn't it, Brent?
Yeah, it was beautiful, his work too.
Yeah, so we hear those stories like that all the time, and yeah, it makes it worthwhile, doesn't it, Brent?
Yeah.
That's great. Now, do you do, I forget, do you have the whole thing done before you release the first one, or do you do it on the fly?
No, it's all designed. It's all put away before we actually, about a month or two before we release the first part. Okay. It's all finished and locked away. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd never actually finish it, probably. So I have to set myself that deadline just to make sure it's done and locked away.
Plus, we have to give them the requirements for the whole sample as well. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah, you would. Yeah. So, yeah.
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 But I'll still tweak it as I'm going along. Yeah. So as I'll hit each month, I'll decide that it doesn't quite look right, or I want to change something or tweak it around. But the basic layout and the design will stay the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it? I assume it's still fun for you. Or you wouldn't do it. But fun in terms of you still have lots of ideas for the next one.
We're planning next year's one at the moment.
Oh, okay. good then.
They'll start asking for the requirements at about what, August?
August, yeah. We'll start getting people wanting to know what it hints and what it's going to be looking like. I won't have it done by then, but I'll have a pretty good idea by then what it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And then we'll spend a month or so pulling it together.
Yeah. He knows what he's doing. He's just got to put it into the program now, yeah. Make it all work. No, but you try to keep them all a single color, don't you, so that they can have fun then with the color choices.
Yeah, that way I'm not limiting what people do with the sampler. Yeah. So, you know, everything's been charted for a single color, and then it's up to you to interpret how you're doing it. So you know, this year where we're doing the Talavera pottery as an inspiration. The color palette that they've got is just amazing. And, you know, people are using the negative space now and they're starting to fill that in. And, you know, there's just some really amazing interpretations of the design coming up, which is really exciting to see each month when you get on there and see what everyone's done and how they're pulling it together.
Yeah, it's a neat thing. Beth and I have been talking a lot in recent shows about creativity and making things your own and changing colors and so on and so forth. And often that pops into my head, your stitch along pops into my head as a classic example of something that not only allows but encourages people to just try something and see if it works out. And a lot of times it really works out incredibly well.
Right.
Yeah. We get a lot of messages from a lot of people when they're starting to join it. You know, they're all afraid of picking colors. So that, you know, that first year they might do it in a single color. And then they watch everybody else on the Facebook group. And then in the next year, you'll see that they start to branch out and they get their confidence behind them and they start really putting color into the designs,
mm-hmm.
which is really encouraging, seeing, you know, people actually expanding and doing those things that they'd never actually been comfortable doing before. You know, they've always stitched a design using the threads the designer used on the fabric the designer recommended. And now they're actually starting to see that they can actually change these things and make them more personal to themselves.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is it's on the surface, it's just a simple stitch along of a guy's design. But when you dig in a little bit, yeah, that kind of stuff is happening and that it helps people advance their hobby and advance their confidence and their skills. And it's those deeper meanings that really, really carry the day versus just simply stitching a sampler.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, and we're hearing too that it's bringing people back to stitching as well. So that you know they haven't stitched for a long time, or they, you know, they did it when they were little and life got in the way, and now they're coming back. You know, with the things that's happening around the world at the moment, people got a bit more spare time, so they're looking to fill that time in, and they're coming back and looking at things, you know, that they did when they were younger, or they did previously that they had to forgo because they, you know, they had a family and they had kids and, you know, their priorities changed. So, you know, that's good as well. That it's because it's a cheaper way of getting into a design, because, you know, the design's free. You just got to get your threads and your fabric. It's giving them that opportunity to get back into needlework. And then from there, they're branching on to more advanced needlework and different kinds of needlework from that.
Yeah. That's fantastic. That's really a true success story there. It really is. Yep.
And there's a lot of support in the group too. You know, sometimes people are having a hard time and they might just need to sort of, you know, or they might have a hard time with the way their work's looking or whatever. And you know, we often wake up to questions asked and answered by the time we get up of a day. And there's, you know, somebody will say, can somebody help me? I'm not sure about this, or I'm not sure about that, or do I complete the cross as I go, whatever. And the amount of answers, what, Brendan, there'd be like 150 answers by the time we wake up to see the question. And so they're all doing the work for us now in the group, aren't they, Brendan? I don't think you really had to answer a question unless they tag you in something.
Yeah, I don't get much of a chance anymore. They're always answered before I wake up.
So it's a really helpful place for people to ask and get problems solved.
Yeah, and we've been lucky too. You know, as groups get bigger, sometimes they tend to get a bit sidetracked and
stuff, yeah.
We haven't had any of that. So you know, every now and then we have a little hiccup in the group.
But, and you'll notice a stern little post from me every so often. But, if something happens to Brendan, I get a bit protective, and once in a while I just put a little reminder on there, and just every so often.
Yeah, but we've got a really good group of ladies and gentlemen that are really supportive of each other, and yeah, so a lot of the nastiness that you see in some of the Facebook groups, we don't have any of that at all, which is really good.
5 years, we've been lucky.
Yeah, no, that's tremendous, yeah. Yeah, because those groups, they get so big, and at some point managing them and dealing with the drama makes you just want to turn it off, and...
I've subscribed from a few lately because I just don't want to see the hate, be honest. So I'm there for stitching. I don't want to be there for the nastiness. So I've left a couple of them recently. You just don't need that in your life. I'm like, no. It's all about the stitching and the joy and the friends you make there. It's not about, you know, nastiness.
Right. And that's the thing, that group shows, I mean, what I love watching, I'm not stitching this year's, but I love seeing the development of the collars, what people are using in their colorways. It's just so much fun just to watch that and to see people encouraging, saying, well, I'm not sure about this color. And people even say, you know, kindly suggesting, well, maybe if you tweak that color a little bit, you might like it. And that's just fabulous to see.
Things that they hadn't thought of. Yeah.
Right, right.
Oh, some of the color combinations are even shocking you, aren't they, Bryn?
Yeah, some of them are just absolutely amazing. I was looking at one the other day, and they put shading in it. And it just gave the whole – the tile that they stitched this month, it just gave it a whole different look. It looked like a totally different design. And that's just through the color choice and the placement of the colors that lady did. It's just amazing.
That's terrific, yeah. And speaking of samplers now, the Fox and Rabbit, it's the Fox and Rabbit that does the samplers. I always have to sort these out in my head. So you're cooking right along and reproducing samplers?
Yeah, we've got about 8 or 9 samplers we're reproducing at the moment. We've held a couple of the larger ones over till next year.
To market
next year, because they're special. We think they're special samplers, and they really need, they need an audience there. They need to be seen. We just don't want to release them.
What about 18?
We want to celebrate them. Yeah. But, we're constantly getting new samples. Another one arrived in the mail yesterday, which is a really pretty one. We got that.
That'll be a market one.
Yeah, we got that for a bargain, which is – I still don't know how I got it so cheap on the auction. But
you've got to be quick.
Yeah.
Our problem over here, again, is the time difference. Brendan and we're bidding on something, but it finishes at 3 o'clock in the morning. Or something, and so he often misses out unless he sets his alarm.
Yeah.
You've stayed up for a few, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we got lucky with this one. But it's a beautiful sampler with some amazing roses and flowers on it. It's just stunning.
Red, white, and green. It's beautiful.
Are you seeing still a good, steady stream of quality samplers going on the market at auctions and through other channels? I mean, is that holding up?
Yeah, we've seen some actually amazing samplers that have come up recently. We've missed out on a couple, unfortunately. We've been outbid. A couple of them have been outbid by other reproduction
friends
companies.
Friends of ours.
Friends did us. But, and they're going to reproduce those samplers, so at least other people are going to get to see them.
They see it on their floss tube. I think, no, that was ours. No. And we think, well, at least it's in good hands.
Yeah. And there seems to be two lots of samplers that we're noticing coming up at the moment. So there's some that are severely damaged and not overly good, but then there's been some absolutely amazing ones. Some I wish I could afford, but unfortunately, I can't. Karen puts a budget on me.
But even the damaged ones we can reproduce. Sometimes, you know, if it's a sampler that you don't necessarily want for your wall, if you're not reproducing them, even the really damaged ones, we want to reproduce them so we can usually
save them.
Yeah, so they might not be appealing to someone for their wall, but they're appealing to a designer to reproduce it and give it a new life.
Yeah, one we actually bought recently, someone had actually cut it in half. So we got the bottom half of the sampler, so I don't know if they sold the top half of the sampler to somebody else.
But we got the good half.
We got the good half.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So we're going to design. So this will be a half reproduction, half original.
Yeah, so we'll do an interpretation for the top of the sampler.
But the top exists. Someone owns the top.
I would imagine someone's got it somewhere because looks like it had been cut with scissors.
But it was framed with a mat, so we're thinking that possibly there may have been so much damage to the top of the sampler that to sell it, someone's cut it off and reframed it with a mat and everything. Because possibly the top was too damaged to sell, so they rather than just take a punt and put it on, we don't know.
But it's out there somewhere.
Very
the other
pretty,
half of our sampler,
and it's got an awesome border, so we can continue the border around.
Yeah.
So at the top will be our interpretation. So we'll find a nice verse and some nice motives for that time period, and we'll make the rest up ourselves. So it'll be a half original, half repro.
That'll be an interesting one. That'll be a fun one to see.
Yeah. But we've got her name and everything, so at least we can research the person. So we got the good half, like I said. It's got the house, it's got the border, it's got the name. So we probably just lost the verse and a few motives, I'd say, up the top.
And
so.
Maybe an alphabet or two.
Yeah.
That's not so bad. When you see damaged ones, do you tend to just pass them by, or is there a pause there for you to evaluate that there might be some value, that you might do something with them?
Yeah, we've actually got a fair few samplers that have some damage on them. Some of them is pretty bad. Some of them we know we're just buying just to keep them and try and make sure that they don't get destroyed any more than they have been. Because you got to think that, you know, this was something that a little girl spent weeks or months or maybe years putting together. They put all their, you know, all their spare time and all their love into the sampler, and it's really sad that people are a little bit snobbish about some of the damaged samplers, and they're not giving them a home.
Yeah.
Truthfully, the ones that probably put us off more than the damaged ones are the ones where there is literally no color in them left. Like, I love the beta miner type samplers, and sometimes you'll see ones that have got a little girl or whatever in them, and if there's so much fading that you just can't make out the definition of the you know, the motive for that, probably puts us off more, where you can't see what the rows look like because it's all just cream, you know, where all the definition has been faded. That puts us off more than damaged ones. So if the color is really faded and gone, and it's not so much that we can make colors up, but it's more if the definition and the motive is gone and you can't see what was there, that probably is not. You bought one once that had two figures in it, and you just could not make out.
No, we were hoping on the back that you could still see the color, so we'd be able to rechart it. But even the color on the back was gone.
Oh, that's too bad.
Which was sad.
Yeah. That doesn't happen very often, but
with the interest that we've had in recent years in samplers, have you seen more Australian samplers emerge, or is that still a fairly limited market?
We've only found one so far that we can actually prove is Australian.
Okay.
That we've got, which is the Emily Trump sampler. We've got a couple of other samplers we've got in the collection which we think might be Australian, but we still haven't been able to definitively prove that they are. Unfortunately, needlework in Australia wasn't massive.
Quilting was.
Quilting was more prevalent in early Australian than needlework was. But there are a few around. We know they're around.
There's one over in South Australia that, when life gets back to, well, life is getting back to normal, but it's over in a little tiny museum in a little tiny town. We're looking at getting the rights to reproduce that because we know that was stitched in Australia because the town, she's written the town on it, and it's a little town in South Australia. So we're looking into getting that one or the rights to that one. That'll stay in the museum, but we'll get the photos. We're in touch with those people at the moment. We know that's Australian, so it's quite rare. A lot of them were stitched in Australia, but they were born in England. No, they stitched them in England and moved to Australia.
They brought them to Australia with them.
When they came over.
Yeah. Whereas with quilting, there's a bigger history of quilting in Australia because when the convict women were coming over, there was actually a group of society.
The governor's wife and things like that.
Yeah, who actually gave each of these ladies quilting supplies so they could make a quilt
when they
arrived to Australia.
A lot of convict quilts.
Yeah, so there's a lot of those around, but not so much the needlework. I guess they were, because, you know, Australia's history, they were more looking for things that they could use rather than pretty things that sat on the wall.
Even the quilts were very utilitarian. Some haven't survived because they were literally used every day. In our hot summers and stuff, they literally used them to the point where they fell apart, and then they threw them out and they made another quilt. So they're even can be rare. But what about that man that came up to you at the show, Brennan, the one his great-grandmother had stitched?
Yeah. Australia had I guess it was the late 60s, 70s. Early 70s, they had a movement here where they wanted to get rid of a history. You know, so everyone wanted the new shiny things, and they got
plastic
rid of
70s.
You know, wanted formica and and vinyl, and
all the old cedar furniture got burned,
smoked glass. So a lot of they cleared a lot of the old houses out of all the old furniture, so there was a whole lot of cedar furniture which was absolutely gorgeous. It was just burnt. And decorations off the walls, they did the same things to. So a lot of needlework and things were actually destroyed as part of that. We were at a retail trade show with our samplers a couple of years ago, and a man came up and told us a story. He had actually tears in his eyes when he was talking about it. But that's what their family did. They actually...
His great-grandmother's...
Yeah.
When it was stitched to.
Yeah, when she died, nobody wanted anything. So when they were selling the house, they just put a big bonfire at the back.
No, they actually went to the tip.
We went to the tip.
To the rubbish tip. He said they took it off the wall, asked all the family did they want it. It was a big sampler along with everything else, and they all didn't want it, and it went to the rubbish tip. Which is, Oh, Brendan, I thought so Brendan was going to collapse on the spot when he told him that. And he was describing it. It was a bit, from the sound of it, it was a beautiful big pictorial kind of sampler, and it was his great-grandmother's. So that would have been around about the 1840s, something like that. So that would have been extremely rare. And she had stitched it here. So that would have been very rare. Like that would have been a museum type thing. They would have snapped that up.
Here. So Australia lost a lot of its history
In the 70s and 80s.
In the late 60s, early 70s, and even into the 80s. It was just all destroyed.
But we're always looking. You know, we found a beautiful sampler. Again, we paid for the rights. I went down there just when quarantine broke about mid last year, and it's this tiny little town of about, I don't know, a couple of hundred, and there's this little tiny museum. And here's in the back corner of somewhere, there's this beautiful little sampler, which I absolutely love. It's probably my favourite one. I'll actually be stitching that one myself. And I'm charting that at the moment. So we bought the rights to it, and it was tucked in the back of, you barely even knew it was there. So we're researching that now. If that turns out to be an Australian sample, we'll be thrilled. It's just stunning.
So that's what you're having to do is find these little museums and historical societies and just kind of dig for them if you really want them.
Yeah, and you find that they've got all these little things hidden away. So we were at another old house down in Canberra.
Oh yeah.
And they had a whole bunch of samplers on the walls, and we're looking at them, and they all have native Australian birds in them. And then, obviously COVID happened. We haven't had a chance to go back down there and have a look at them yet. But, we've got to make an appointment to go back down there so we can actually go into because the room was locked off. You couldn't get into the room. But we need to make an appointment to go in there and have a look at those and actually see if they are Australian. So we're hoping that they're a whole series of Australian samples as well with native birds on them.
And there's not an op shop or a antique shop that we don't always just duck into. Sometimes the op shops that we hear stories about people finding them in op shops and stuff here where
we haven't been lucky.
We haven't been that lucky, no, but but we've also we get the word out too. When Brent goes and does talks like at the embroidery school and things like that, we'll sort of say, look, if you know of anyone, because a lot of them are in family homes, so rather than on display museums. So a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I've got one at home that was my grandmother's or whatever. And so we've had a few people that have actually contacted us and given us permission to reproduce their family samplers, which is very kind. We've got two or three of those at the moment where they just contact us and say, look, we'd be happy for you to reproduce this. So we've always got the word out. We never miss an opportunity when you give a talk or something to say, just in case anyone's got anything, we're always looking. And Bren's researching Australian samplers at the moment because he'd like to probably – do a bit of a book or something on Australian samplers one day. So we're sort of researching that now. Last year, you just put a little bit of a kink in the present, but now things are getting back to normal. You can get back to that now. There's not really any good definitive books on Australian samplers, so he's working on that now.
That whole thing is, we've been going through a kind of a major clean out here at the house, 25 years of crawl space storage, what's it doing in there? And so we've been, things that are old and our kids don't want them. And so we've had many discussions, Marg and I have, about the stuff that really is, it's been in the family, like the bassinet that I was in when I was a baby in 1955, all four of my three siblings and I all used, and then our two kids used, and then our two grandkids used. And now it's reached the end of the line, and nobody wants it. So this bassinet that's 70 plus years old is going to get given away or trashed, and all those things. And it's that history that gets just thrown away because younger people don't want it, and it's just a shame. And there's no place. There's just nothing you can do with it. And like that bassinet is so delicate anymore, still functional, but you can't ship it somewhere and it'd just be ruined. And, you know, but yeah, all those things. And there's got to be people that want that stuff and want to preserve it. But yeah, I think we all eventually just reach the end of the line and, you know, it's either got to throw it out or somebody needs to take it off our hands. Cause
right. I had a friend contact me. Her mother had passed and she had linens and, you know, she says, I don't know what I'm going to do with these. The vintage shops don't want them. And so I took them because a friend and I, she makes art quilts. And so at least they were being used. It was either that or she was literally going to put them in the trash can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get upset when you see photographs at the antique shops and stuff, don't you?
Yeah. It's really sad when you go into a secondhand shop and you see someone's old photographs that are there for sale and you think, wow.
Yeah, back in the...
You know, the family didn't care enough about them to keep them. It's just a little sad that they...
Yeah, war medals and things like that. And you think, who's dumped these?
No, I know everyone's got to make decisions about what they keep because, you know, houses are getting smaller and smaller and, you know, spaces is always at a premium. But it's just really sad that families are losing a lot of their own history.
Yeah.
Right there, Gary. The question is, how long do you hang on to something? You know, where right. You don't have the room or the need for it anymore. And I don't know.
Well, and that's just it. You know, that the crawl space, it wasn't full, but it was a full day project to empty it out. And then we're still going through the stuff. And you have to be ruthless in terms of what you keep.
Yeah.
But still,
we're doing that now.
You know, it's family history. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's part of our married lives, but also each of our individual lives. And how much do you keep? And then, you know, ask the family, do you want it? No, I don't want it. And it's hard to throw it away. And but at some point, you just have to make a decision about whether you can keep it. And it's really tough.
It's hard to know what to do, though. I've said no to things over the years when I was younger, too, that I'm kicking myself now and think, oh, I wish I had that thing my nana asked me, did I want, you know, and things like that. Because I've gotten older and see more the value of it than I did when I was maybe 20 and you wanted the next new shiny thing. So, I know it's difficult. We're actually having a massive clean out now too because
Yeah, builds up.
Yep.
Well, yeah, see, and that's stuff.
And there's only Brendan and I. It's
yeah.
Not like we've got kids.
And that's the cool thing about samplers, reproduction samplers for me is that history, whether it's the original or the stitched reproduction, the history is getting preserved. And respected and put on a new level. And I love that part of it. It doesn't just get thrown away. And, you know, people are tracking down the history behind them and it's being recorded. And, that's a whole class of needlework that without that effort would just go away too. And.
I love the history of it all.
Yeah. So one of the samplers that we're reproducing, releasing next year, one of our friends, Cindy, she's a genealogist and she actually spent about 2 months actually going through and researching the whole family history of the little girl.
Of course.
Yeah. So it's amazing now with Ancestry and all those online resources, all the information you can find out about people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And with all the old censuses the people putting up now, you can actually see their careers and how their careers changed through the years as well. And
yep.
How their life changed. It's really amazing.
You saw somebody's handwriting the other day and you just think, that's the handwriting of the person whose sampler this is.
Yeah.
You know, I love that.
Yeah.
And we found the cemetery of Emily Trump as well.
Yeah, we actually went and visited her grave. So she's Australian sampler that we had.
Oh.
Yeah, so she actually grew up about 2 hours from where we live now. So we actually went up and found her grave in the cemetery.
And that photograph of her grave is on our chart. On the back of the chart.
See, that adds so much meaning. When you're stitching that thing, it adds so much meaning to the needlework.
Yeah, it's a simple sampler, but it's...
But it's also good because you find out the family scandals as part of that as well. So she had a little scandal in her family.
She had quite a scandal.
Yeah, she actually has two birth certificates with two different names.
Uh-oh.
So when she was actually born, her mother made up a father.
Which is the name that's on the sampler.
Yeah, and then
she married
just after she stitched the sampler, her mother actually married another gentleman, and they changed her birth certificate then to say that he was the father.
So not just changed her name, changed the birth certificate. So Bren had a weird old time tracking down what was the real birth sampler. Because she had two.
Yeah, she had two birth certificates with two different names.
Wow.
Oh, my.
And two different fathers.
Quite a lot to go through.
So she was legitimized.
Yeah.
12 years after she was born. You wasn't her dad. So that was fascinating. But she married and had a lot of kids and, as I said, died about 2 hours from where we live.
Yeah.
The beautiful, she had a big gravestone. So. Yeah.
See, that's so much fun.
It's just weird being at the cemetery and looking at the gravestone of somebody whose sampler we own. It was, that always gets me. Oh, that always, it's awful when you can't find anything on them, though, isn't it?
Yeah, because unfortunately sometimes they've got really common names and, you know, you'll have
Mary Smith or
40 different choices of people that they could be that were born in the right area around at the right time, and you just can't work out which one it is.
And then sometimes they put things like there's one Brent has with that Grampound school, that Cornwall sampler.
Yeah.
That had even the school that she attended, so that was a good one to research.
Yeah, we were able to track her all the way back. And, you know, through the census in the UK, we also could track her history, you know, the jobs that she had. And she actually become a servant in a house in Cornwall.
Hmm.
So, we could track that through. And
because the more information they put on the sampler.
See a little bit more about her life and how she lived.
Yeah.
The town they lived in. As long as they've got something on there that sets them apart from the other Mary Smith or whatever.
Yeah. Right. The other 500.
And it's fun when you're stitching them to think about the little girl and what her life was like when, you know, that made the sampler. That's been the fun things when the ones that I've been working on. You think, what was this person's life like, you know?
Absolutely.
And the more you know, the more interesting it is.
Yeah, it's always fun when you see those samplers where the little girls obviously hated doing it every second, and they you know, they put that little phrase on at the end saying, basically, you know, they've only stitched this because they were made to.
I saw a floss tube. I think it was Nicola from Hands Across the Sea, and she was... She has one where I think the little girl got halfway through. It was a little red alphabet sampler. I think she got halfway through and she'd researched it and she died, sadly. And her sister, who was only 8 at the time, when she was 12, she picked it up and finished it. So I thought, oh, that was just like... So the sampler technically is both of the little girls. But I Nicola even sort of said, look, this is probably the point where the little girl died. You could kind of see a little bit of a difference in the stitching. And I thought, oh, my goodness, 12 years old. So she's, you know, back in the day probably died of whooping cough or some of those horrible childhood illnesses back in those days. And I just thought it was lovely that her sister 4 years later picked it up and finished it. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, that's neat.
You know, just a simple sample. The sample is nothing. You know, it's just a lovely little redwork sampler. But I would stitch that because I love the story behind it. You know?
Right.
And you think here we are 200 years later and – people are going to stitch it again. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing that you can't get with any other needlework is those kinds of stories and that add so much meaning and depth to the project that you can't get that with a cross-stitch ornament or a charted canvas needlepoint piece. You know, doesn't work.
Very true.
Yeah, and it just means all these girls are remembered as well. So they're not forgotten, you know. You think a lot of them were poorer people, or they, you know, they ended up as house servants, or they're never going to be anybody famous, or anyone's really going to remember for any particular reason. But just because they spent this time when they were little doing this little craft at night, you know, they're remembered forever.
It's in a house in 2021. It's sort of like, you know, hanging on somebody's wall. So even though it may not be in their family, it's still being treasured by people like us who love them.
Yeah, but there's also, you know, a couple of hundred other people in the world that are actually then taking that needlework and reinterpreting it and stitching it for themselves. So it just goes on forever.
Hopefully thousands.
That's great. All right, Blackberry Rabbit, what are we doing these days? Uh-oh.
Well, we're helping a certain fox in the room. truthfully, last year was just, it started off normal. You know, market was great, had all our releases for market. But then when we got home, it just went crazy. The shop went crazy, like linen and threads. And truthfully, I think between your linen and me helping sort of with that, and just the shop being crazy all last, it was just phenomenal. 20 years. We celebrate our 20th anniversary in June, and I don't think we've had a busier year in the 20 years, have we, Brent? So I was sort of – I mostly had a couple of releases late last year, but I was sort of getting the stuff ready for market. And as I said, I will be releasing some, though, in May, which would have been the delayed date that I was aiming for. What I need to do this year, though, is I know I've said it before, but I literally want to – and we've got a big planner on the wall now. I've got to start planning release dates. So I hope to have quite a lot coming out from about May and then get into a bit of a more of a regular release schedule. Now that Brendan's no longer – see, last year Brendan was doing two jobs, so that – didn't leave us a lot of time. Now that he's doing this full time with me, it's leaving me more time to design now. So I hope to have a regular schedule. I've got two cows that have you heard of the Moo the Merrier releases they're doing at the online show?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody, I can't think who, somebody thought at for market they would have a theme, and some designers said that'd be great. And the idea was that you would go from room to room and collect that particular chart in this particular theme. Well, clearly that couldn't happen because market didn't happen. So their release, I think they're going to do something similar next year. But because all these people had, all these designs had done cows, they're releasing them at the online show. And the theme was called Moo the Merrier. So I'm just madly stitching our fox and rabbit one and my blackberry rabbit one now. So that will be, and they've all got to be, sorry, that's just the, are you supposed to do it? It's just the garbage pickup truck. Friends just closing the window. Sorry about that. So we'll release the two little Moo the Merriers at market. So, and they all had to be like 60 by 60, so they're small.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So they're coming out. And as I said, I'll have my next lot of blackberry rabbit releases in May. So, and as I said, probably I'm going to try for about every sort of 3 months to having three or four designs released this year.
Yeah, okay. I figured.
So are they going to be
last year?
So are Karen? Are those going to be like more construction sort of pieces? Like
definitely. I always have my construction pieces, my little boxes, and definitely. Now I like to have at least like two constructed things with every couple of framed pieces that I do, because that's what I love doing. So mine are kind of getting a bit smaller, so that they're a bit more achievable. But I love the constructed things. See, what I do plan on doing too, in all my spare time, is trying to do some videos when I make them as well. So because on our website we need to put, you know, tutorials and stuff. I mean, there's some obviously there's some amazing finishes out there. But a lot of people have asked, can I just do some videos when I'm making them? So I'm going to do that to go along with the release as well. So I'm just not real, a bit nervous about doing things like that. But I love to teach those sort of things in classes, but obviously I can't get to classes this year. So I am going to do those videos, but definitely constructed things.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I learn how to edit videos.
Yes.
Yes. I think that's a great idea, because I think people, you know, you make these things and how many little pillows can you have, or how many you know, things can you hang on the wall?
That's
but if
exactly
you make it into a box and yeah, stick stuff in the box or stick
exactly
things in the container, and that's just I just love that idea.
That's what I love doing. That's my favorite thing to do. And it's nice when you can teach those when the world gets back to normal, we can teach it again. I just like sort of like even at market, I always do a class at market usually, and it's just nice that people can realize it's not as hard as they thought it was, because it's really not. I don't do anything that's not achievable, but sometimes it is good just to have someone show you. So in lieu of no classes, I'm just going to do the videos. And that's Brendan's project at the moment. He has to learn to – we're actually looking at doing a floss tube as well, so he's got to learn to edit videos, because I'm sure I'll be making mistakes.
Yeah, I've got to learn all about lighting and all about videos, so we can make ourselves look good and sound like we know what we're talking about.
Yep.
So we're getting on the floss tube, getting on the floss tube roller coaster, I think. We've been getting asked for ages, and we thought, oh, I don't know. But it's a good way of showing people what we're working on, what's coming out soon. Builds up good sort of, builds up sort of, what's the word, for shops. So, you know, it's shops. Oh. Yeah. So people can sort of contact their shops and know what's coming and things like that. So before we release them. There's nothing worse than just releasing something and then the shops have to scramble to try to find the, you know, to order the linen office or whatever. So if they get a bit of a preview as things are, you know, happening, it gives them a chance to sort of know what's coming, basically. So, yeah. So we're hoping to do that in about the next month. I don't know how many we'll be doing. Probably one every couple of weeks, maybe one a year. I don't know. But that's the plan, so.
Yeah, the bar graph of people who know how to edit videos from 2019 to 2021 is one steep slope up, I'll tell you. You gotta learn how sooner or later. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how everything's changing as well. You know, with everyone being at home, they're looking more online. Yep. So the easiest way to get, you know, to connect with people and get that information out is through video.
And build up excitement for your new releases and stuff like that. So we do obviously lots of Instagram sneak peeks and things like that. And but yeah, if we can show things as they're going on, new linen colors, and as I said, it all helps the shops as well. So
right.
Yeah. Yep. The shops have been great. But so yeah, so Blackberry Rabbit was a little bit quiet last year just because it was just so busy shop wise, plus trying to help Bren while he was still doing his old job of 30 something years that he's very happy to put in the rear view mirror.
Well, keeping an eye on you guys, I knew something had to suffer. There's no way you can keep all fronts going. Just no way.
Yeah.
It's a limit.
But getting my little cows done the other day got me a little bit sort of motivated to keep going now. So as I said, May will be my next lot. So.
Okay. The linen part, dyeing linen has absolutely taken off for you. Was that a slow build up and then a skyrocket, or how did that work?
Yes. So we've actually been dyeing fabric for a few years, but we've only been dyeing it for the retreats that we ran over here. So it started really from necessity. So we run a Mirabilia and Plum Street retreats over here in Australia. And a sampler retreat as well. But we are having trouble getting the linen to actually sell at those retreats as part of our little store that we had. So a friend had a dyeing company called Stitches and Spice. So she was helping us out there for a little while. But she no longer dyes anymore. So it just snowballed from that. So we started dyeing to sell at the retreats. And then Paulette Stewart from Plum Street, when she came over to one of our retreats, she was looking at the linen we were dyeing and she asked, could she use some of it in her designs? And then it just really grew exponentially from there.
So she was the gate that opened up for you.
Oh, we owe her so much.
Yeah. So she saw something in us. And helped open that gate to pushed us along that path as well to actually start concentrating on the linens.
Well, she released two of her designs at market last year using I think it was Eureka and Hog Bristle, and it went from there. In the lead up to market, Hoffman contacted you and said we're getting a lot of I think some of our stitchers saw stuff in the mystery group. And what they would do then, Bren would show something he'd done and they would contact their shop over there and say, can you get this linen? And then the shop would contact Hoffman and say, do you know anything about this linen? And then Hoffman contacted us and said, could we carry it? And between that and Paulette's releases at market, just went. And our releases, obviously we stitched all of our stuff for market. Once we knew Hoffman was carrying our linens, we stitched nearly everything for market last year on ours as well, I think, from memory. Yeah. And we sold it at market as well.
Yeah, and it's just grown from that, and it's grown really, really quickly, which is absolutely amazing. The support that we've got has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
And this year there's a number of designers that would bring out designs using our linens.
We've got a box full of linen going out to designers in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
They've been asking.
So all of this happening in the house?
Well, yeah. So I'm lucky. At the back of our house, we've got a large detached garage, and at the back of that, there's a like a wet area,
covered
area, which is where I'm doing all the dyeing at the moment. So we keep trying to keep as much as we can out of the house because otherwise it just takes over.
Hence the cleanup. We're actually that's what I was saying about that cleanup. We're actually cleaning the whole double garage out, and we're setting that up
as a full studio.
As a studio, yeah. We're going to get some flooring put down and make it it won't be a garage anymore. It'll be our studio.
Yeah, and get some more plumbing put in there, and so we can move it inside as well. Because obviously, although the area I'm dying in at the moment is covered, it's still outside. So we're still subject to the weather.
If the rain's pouring in horizontally.
Yeah, which has been the last couple of days. It's a little bit hard to die.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're lucky, though, Brent can die year-round with the climate. We live up on the coast.
Yeah, so, you know, it's rarely below, like, 70 degrees. So we can pretty much die outside all year-round. Although, you know, the last week or two, it's been up over the hundreds, so that hasn't been fun either.
Ugh. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a little too hot.
Mm. Yeah.
So we've just got a big shipment going to Hoffman and some a heap of linen to certain some designers, and then our 40 count arrives finally.
Yeah. It's been a while. So unfortunately, getting supplies of linens has been a problem for the last year.
Since about October.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you sourcing yours from Zweigert, or where are you getting your base linen?
Yeah, so we're only using Zweigert linen at the moment. We were thinking about, because of the supply problems, thinking about getting some Perman linen as well. But we've actually, luckily, Zweigert have been working with us. They've been really fantastic for us. And we've actually commissioned specific production runs for us. So we've got thousands of yards on call.
That we can draw down
That we can draw down on from Germany. So.
Wow.
That was a heart starter, Beth. Let me tell you, placing that order.
Yeah, that purchase order was pretty scary.
committing to it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So they're slowly catching up now on getting all that ready for us. So the 40 count.
They've done the 40 and the 36. They've just got to do the 32. We're just waiting on 32.
Yeah, that'll be next month. And then from that point, we won't have supply problems because we've got thousands of yards allocated to us.
Yeah.
But it has been difficult.
We have a year to take it up.
Zweigert, their guys, they're working three shifts now. They've just put in a couple of new machines and they still can't meet the demand. It's just gone crazy.
and you posted on Instagram some, they were like shades of pink, and those were just, I was like, okay, yes, I love those fabrics. What are the names?
Yeah.
What are the names?
So they're all colors that we've been playing with for the releases for market next month. So not all of those are going to make it.
At least three are.
But three of them are. Yeah, we actually haven't named them yet. So that's always the hardest bit.
We try to find sort of cool names to make them a bit quirky, and particularly Australian names.
Yeah, some of them are like Hogbristle. Paulette Stewart named that. Everyone. Yes,
and Tanya Brockmeyer's got one at the moment that she's going to – we said if we've created something especially for them – they can actually name it. So Tanya's got one. Like Tanya's using, I think, at the moment, Baked Clay and Hog Bristle in two releases coming out. So, so she's got to come up with a name for that one. So everyone keeps asking us, well, what's a Hog Bristle? Is that something Australian? I'm like, no, Paulette. No. We don't know where it's going from.
So, and I have a piece of seaweed 40 cal.
Oh, that's been really popular.
Oh, yeah. That is just a gorgeous color. And I was thinking, oh, what can I see? And I had a piece of DMC black floss, and I was like, oh, this just really pops off of here. It's just a gorgeous color.
Seaweed's been very popular.
Yeah. So seaweed actually originally started off as a fabric color from the other designer we talked about before, Naomi at Stitches and Spice. So she had a color similar to that.
Mm-hmm. It's called camouflage.
Yeah, which a few designers had used. And they'd actually asked us if we could
Jean from the attic.
Yeah, Jean from the attic actually asked if we could re-dye that. So we talked to Naomi about it, and she gave us the recipe, her recipe. But unfortunately, the dye colours that she'd used have all been discontinued.
So Brent had to start from scratch.
Yeah,
so it's completely his.
That's one of the most complicated linens that I actually dye. I think it's got 13 different colors in it to actually get
It takes him ages.
It takes forever, but it comes out as a really, really nice linen. We're really proud of actually that color, the colors that we get out in that one, the greens and the browns.
So, and have you been having problems getting the dyes? I know that there was a problem there with getting even the different types of dyes were not available either.
Yeah, so we're sourcing all ours in Australia, and the company here in Australia hasn't had the same troubles that the US has had in actually getting the dyes. But they've discontinued a lot of their colours, which has proven difficult. So we've had to reformulate a couple of times as they've discontinued some colours, especially a black that they had, which was a beautiful black that they've gotten rid of, and we used that as a tint in a lot of our colours. So we had to reformulate. But no, we've been lucky here with supply of those dyes. We don't have those same issues.
Brent's been buying it by the kilo too, just to be on the safe side.
More kilos.
Kilos.
So
yeah. Just in case you've been paranoid about having shortages of things, he's been buying way more than he probably needs, but just in case, because we don't want what's happened in the States to happen here. You never know. Things are going well here, but if there is a shortage, he'll be right, I think, until the next millennium. So.
Yeah, the Procyon Black, too, that's the dye I use, and the one we were originally using, I think you can't get it anymore. And
it's a Procyon dye. That's what Brent uses.
Yeah, which is a shame, because that black was beautiful.
It was, and it made beautiful tones. Tones, right? That's the word I want. So, yeah.
I've got about 3 teaspoons of it left.
But he can't use it on anything that that's just if I want him to do something special for me, because we can't reproduce it, so he can't use it for our linens, but he can dye it for something
for himself.
Special. Yeah. No, the linen, you should see our lounge room at the moment. It's just, and what about, you want to tell him about,
Oh, yeah, we finally went and bought a roller iron, which has made life a lot easier.
My arm is very great.
A lot less RSI from sitting down and hand ironing linen.
The difference has been phenomenal.
I saw that pile of wrinkled linen, and that you were ironing it with a regular iron. I thought, you guys are nuts.
Yeah. My shoulder is still. There was one point, I think, after about 700 yards, where I couldn't lift my arm to lift the iron anymore. Bren was, you were ironing as well. And so we got online and said, yep, we're biting the bullet and buying this machine. It's the best thing we could have possibly. It's and the good thing is, yes, that pile was actually that shouldn't have been crumpled like that. We do normally have it laid out so it's fairly wrinkle-free, like it is all over our lounge room at the moment. But what would have taken us a day will take us, an hour and a half, 2 hours. Yeah. So
And iron it much better than you can ever iron by hand.
It's beautifully pressed now, so that's wonderful.
So this just runs it through hot rollers and...
Yeah, hot rollers and steam.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I have it a laundromat type thing. It's designed for sheets and stuff in hotels. It's professional.
Yeah, the machine that we've got is designed for small hotels, so they can run their sheets and their tablecloths through it.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you can just set up...
It folds up quite compact.
What's that?
It folds up quite compact, doesn't it? Brent, it kind of flips vertically and you can just wheel it into the corner. So it doesn't take up a lot of real estate in the house. So that'll probably go out into our studio when we get it all finished, so that we can have that also out of our house.
We're trying to move everything
out of the house. Definitely. And it's a big long double garage. It's a big space. That's what's about 2 weekends time we're doing that. Oh, it's one of those things you don't want to do, but you need it done. And I will be so happy once it's done. But we're kind of like, oh. And it's hot. As I said, it's hot here at the moment, so you don't want to get out there. And we're sort of waiting for some cool days so we can get out there and do it when it's not so hot.
So now when you get the garage done, then will that be exclusively for linen dyeing, or will there be enough room that you can have your design equipment, your stitching equipment out there too?
all the charts and everything will be all our everything wholesale will be out there. Brent's got his own office and I've got mine as well. So we kind of have all of our favorite things all around us in our offices. So that's actually where we design. Oh, okay. So I'm at one end of the house, he's up the other. I like to be surrounded by all my pretty things. So the designing will still be done inside and stitching will still be done in front of the telly. But all of our wholesale stuff, everything storage wise, will be out there. All the charts will be out there.
And all the production side.
Yeah.
Okay. So the factory gets out of the house then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So we get a little bit of space back.
Well, so
it's lucky this is audio and not video, because you should see our lounge room with all the linen around here at the moment.
And we're not tripping over bolts of fabric.
Oh.
Well, psychologically, it gives you a way to get away from it too. I think that's a plus.
Well, especially since Bren's doing it full time, and you do need to separate your home from your workspace. As I said, the designing area doesn't matter. We love to sit. Bren's surrounded in there by all these Bigfoot posters and everything, and so he finds lots of inspiration. It's just nice to be around, you know, in your nice office. But as I said, everything else needs to go out the back. Yeah. And we've got this perfectly good space not being used, and our cars don't even go in there. So it's just like, I mean, obviously we've got our shop out there as well, but everything will be we're getting racking and cutting table, and I'll do all the surging. That's the one thing I don't know whether we just start to farm that out. But the cutting and the surging of the linen, I've got about, how much you got arriving, Brendan?
600 yards.
So I've got to cut and surge 600 yards in the next couple of days. Plus, we have about another 500 yards already here that I've got to do. So that's over 1,000 yards I've got to cut and surge.
Oh.
So that's fun. I've worked it. I can do 150. I can cut and surge 150 in a day. So.
Wow.
But my aim is to just get everything done. That's what I mean. That's why I haven't had much time to design. But my aim is just to spend the next 2 weeks or so just getting that all done. So that it's more than Brendan needs, obviously. So it's all done, and then I can just get back to designing. Yeah. So, because I kind of can't design while I know that's hanging over my head, and Brendan can't die until I've done it. So that's my sort of two-week aim to get that done. And we're going on a holiday up to Far North Queensland at the end of May. So I've got that to... I keep thinking of that every time I'm sitting there at the surger, thinking, just think about Queensland. Just think about the beach.
Vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the most popular linen count, do you think, right now? Or is there one, do you know?
So the one we sell the most of is 36 count. So we sell about three times the amount of 36 count to any other count.
Yeah, but 40 and 32 are getting up there now too.
Yeah.
A lot of 40 count. You've got a lot of 40 count to get out.
There's a lot of 40 count, but it's still more 36.
Oh, 36 would be the most popular.
So those higher counts. And we're even selling a bit of 56, which surprises me as well. So there's a lot
of... Mostly to Jean and Kimberly.
Yeah, so there's a lot of people that are stitching on those really high counts as well.
I can't see that. I can't see the 56 to do little X's.
Yeah, I tried once and...
Brendan got.
I had a magnifying glass as well as my glasses, and still couldn't see it. So,
Marg McGorphy, who's one of our model stitchers, she does Brendan's mystery sampling nearly every year on 56 count, and like the one you're doing, Gary, the one with the peacock.
Yeah.
I think hers is about 7 inches square, finished.
Whoa.
7 or 8 inches square. It's the prettiest little thing. But she has to use a special needle, and she has to use a special weird thin thread. And if you can't get a DMC thread through it, it's too small for me to stitch on. 46 would be my limit. Yeah, I just...
So is 46 becoming popular?
Again, mostly Jean Kimberly. There's a few shops
that are buying the 46, yeah. So we're selling more and more 46, but...
46.
But still 36 and then 40, are where people are mainly buying the linens.
Okay. Although we're starting to get quite a lot of 32 now too. Starting to.
Not really.
Not as much though. I think 40 is most people's limit, it seems to be, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I can see 40, but I can't see 46 kind of thing. Yeah, but then I see Jean stitching all her stuff on 56, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Jean is not normal.
I was going to say, I don't think she's human, that woman. It's just exquisite. The thing she's doing.
And she just sits there and stitches on that like it's nothing. And it's that's different. That's different.
Yeah. It gives you something to aspire to, I guess. And she makes things, just watching her floss, she makes it look so easy. And she just puts it up with the camera. It's like, just did this yesterday. I'm like, wow.
It's completely effortless. And it's this minuscule thread count, and it's like, how does she do it? And then I'll go home and stitch. I always stitch on 40 count, and I'm hunkered over a magnifier, and every now and then that'll flash in my head. How does she do that? I know.
I don't think there's a magnifier on the market that could make my eyes see 56 count, I've got reasonably good close up vision. To me, 40 counts where I anything smaller, I would not enjoy the stitching. For me personally, that's just. But obviously, some people just love the teeny tiny. But you're starting to get shops asking for Ada and Evenweave too, aren't you?
Yeah, so we'll start looking at that later in the year.
Got some coming on the shipment.
Oh, so you'll be offering that too?
Yeah, we've got some coming over this month and next month, so we can actually start testing it to see how it dies, just to make sure. That it dies okay, and obviously we're going to have to adjust our formulas because of the synthetic that's in those.
Right. Yeah. They don't take the dye the same. I have found that out. Dunking everything in the same dye bath you get. I was showing it to my guild, and it's like, okay, see, this is what happens when you – it looks so different.
It's even different in the linen counts you're finding, aren't you? Like those 46 and 56s are much lighter.
Yeah, they're harder to get them to take dye.
Yeah. So if you've got, say, hog bristle on – 56, it's going to be a lot lighter than 36 or 40. So, but we always say, look, just know that this is a little bit lighter, so which is probably better anyway. I guess if you've got a really teeny, teeny, tiny count, you don't want it to be too dark. You would definitely imagine if you're doing black 56 count, if there is such a thing.
No, that's not happening.
I can't imagine.
No. That's not out.
But a couple, I think some of the shops have said that they're getting, there's a lot of Ada, on the market that's been hand-dyed, but I think they're finding a lot of sampler lovers who might want something on 16 count or an 18 count. They can't get it in the sampler colours. So they're getting, the brighter colours and everything for mirabilias and things like that, but there's not a lot of sampler colours in the Adas. So Brent thought, well, that's fine, let's do it. So you've got a small amount coming, so we've got a couple of shops wanting it, so we'll do it for them and see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll just test it out, see how it goes and
see how it works for them.
And works for us as well.
Yeah.
And if there's enough demand, then we'll bring all that into our range. And
it's not something that occurred to me. I guess we didn't think of people not wanting to stitch them on the finer counts. You forget that, there's a lot of Ada stitches out there, which is absolutely whatever makes people happy stitching, that's what you should stitch on. We have a real problem with people who get a bit funny about people who stitch on Ada. I'm like, well, if it brings them joy and it gets them stitching, I don't care what they stitch on.
Right. Yep. Right. And it looks just as lovely.
Of course it does.
It's just what you can see, what you like, and what you're happy with.
Absolutely.
Yep.
As I said, so that'll be getting done in this next lot.
So we're starting to do that from next week. We'll start testing those out.
We're waiting on the shipment to arrive probably in the next day. It's in the country, so
just clear customs,
it should be here tomorrow, hopefully.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
All right, folks, this has been a treat. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. It's always fun to catch up.
Yep. Learned lots of things, and best of luck with your linen. It sounds like it's going to keep you busy for a good long time. That's great.
I hope so. I'm hoping it continues to grow.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it will. All right. Thanks, and thanks to everybody for listening.